On this episode of the podcast, you know what? I suck at creating content for this podcast. And here's why. Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the After the Bell Rings podcast. Of course, and as always, I am your host, Micah Barnes. I haven't talked to you guys in a while. Man, it has been about, 2 weeks? My goal is to do it every Wednesday, to publish this podcast every Wednesday during the 1 o'clock hour. Didn't do that last time. Didn't do it a couple days ago. It is currently exactly Friday at 12 midnight. But this episode is going to be a little concise. It's going to be a little short because I previously recorded just a couple minutes ago, and then an update came through my phone and just kind of knocked everything off. My phone said, hey, forget your podcast. We're going to update something else that has nothing to do with anything. Nice. Shouts out to Google or Motorola. But I want to kind of pick up where I left off in the three-part series. But before I do that, I realize I suck at creating content. I suck at creating content because I'm so insular. I'm so in my own head and in my own world, whether I am actually in the programming space with my teams or traveling to or traveling from. Like, it just doesn't, posting does not come naturally. Thoughts come naturally. I'm not bashful about putting a camera in front of my face and recording anything. I'm not bashful about telling my story. I'm not bashful about talking, really. But the posting part is what gets me. I can record a video, no problem, but I really do not like putting a description and putting hashtags and everything else. I'm definitely talking about Instagram, which is the popular, I like to tell y'all, which is the, gets the most attention. And then Facebook and LinkedIn, I have trouble with the, I'm not on any platform. I have trouble with the patience to put down text or put down a story. So, like, I can post pictures all day. I can take pictures all day. In my phone right now, I probably have 5 pictures from just today's event of a cooking competition that I had with my group of teens that I still haven't posted. I have pictures from 2-3 days ago. That I still haven't posted. A lot of pictures in my phone that I still have not posted. So with my renewed commitment to keep putting out content, keep providing value, keep telling my story of building my after school program from 3 on the very first day to a monumental goal of 300 students still stands. But part of that journey, part of that marketing, part of building that brand on the way to getting 300 is putting out content every single day that tells my story, putting out content every single day that is a value to you. It is definitely a value to you. So that is my struggle, and that is why I'm starting to realize I suck creating content. But today is my renewed commitment to putting out more content. But here is what I had really scheduled for today. As I said before, my goal was to show all of you how to create 3 podcast episodes from 1 single event. my goal with this podcast was to show you how to create three different podcast episodes from one event. My example is going to be Drone Camp that I'm doing for 10 weeks every Wednesday. With these three episodes, the first one was going to be how I planned it, how I put it all together, how I recruit different people, how I market it, how I buy the drones, and just all the preliminary preparation things that make this camp happen. The second was going to be an inside look into Drone Camp. This is what the kids are doing. This is what the kids are learning. These are maybe some of the comments that they're having, maybe the struggles that they're having, the successes that they're having. And just really taking you inside the room, taking you inside the learning atmosphere, the classroom. That was going to be the second one. The third one is kind of where I dropped the ball, which is supposed to be this episode right here, or last week, or however you want to look at it. It was supposed to be getting actual feedback from the students, one of the students, a couple of the students, whatever, but actual feedback, an actual interview from the students. Hey, what do you think about it? How's Drone Camp going? What have you learned so far? What did you think on the very first day? What did you think you were going to be doing? And how has that changed now? What do you know now that you didn't know on the first day? So it's really going to take you inside the kid's head, of course, with mom and dad's permission. Take you inside their heads on what they think about Drone Camp. Like I said, I dropped the ball because, again, went over this. I'm so insular. I'm so in my own world when I'm in the classroom with them. I'm in awe of what they're learning. I'm in awe of what they can do, like their potential. And just in that learning environment is just intoxicating for me. And I don't even think, most of the time, I don't even think about posting to Instagram. I don't even think about posting anything. If I do take a picture or take a video, it's not with the intention of posting it. It's with the intention of capturing a moment in time, capturing a memorable moment in time. So as far as content goes, I really have to do a better job of doing that. But I do want to give you an update on what the kids are doing. So this, like I said, I'm recording this just after midnight. A couple days ago, they had the task of programming their drone to fly in the shape of an L. So they're learning how to discipline the drone. They're learning how to make it go, make it turn around at a certain angle. How to make it turn around and go at a certain angle. And then a lot of it is trial and error. And those basic life skills, they are learning and grasping and really mastering at this age. Because a lot of my kids they're not even 12. So I have a teen group that goes from 12 to 19. These kids aren't even old enough for that teen group. But maybe for me, it's a kind of a breeding ground. Because that just sounds weird to me anyway, coming out of my mouth. But it's a prequel? I don't know what you got. But you know what I mean. It's a prelude of things to come. So they're not even 12 yet, but the life skills that they're learning, the critical thinking skills, the degrees, like when you're programming your drone to fly in the shape of an M, it's a 90 degree angle in the middle, or maybe at that first turn is going to be a 45 degree angle. And that angle has to be the same as that final turn that they make. So critical thinking, math, communication and everything else is going into what these kids are learning right now. Man, I'm so proud of them. They're really, really getting it. The next task that they're going to do is to fly their drone in a circle. Fly their drone in a circle. I can't wait to see what that's going to be about. So hopefully, even though I suck at creating content, that I'll be able to capture that. So again, my Instagram is Micah_DB. MICAH_DB. All right. MICAH_DB. And hopefully I'll get a chance. You'll see me capture the process of them trying to fly their drone in a circle. By the way, one of them, in the process of coding their drone to fly in the shape of an M, hit me in the side of the face. Note to self, note to all of you drone instructors or people in a similar field, you're dealing with projectiles. Watch your face. Watch your face. Don't come up with a black eye just because a kid turned an M into a W. Watch your face. But regardless, and I can just rant on and on and on about the good things about these kids. And I'll just give you one more. Another good thing I love about the kids is like their personalities is that when one girl's drone hit me in the face, she was immediately apologetic. And then there's another kid who's, I can tell in school, he plays the class clown role. But it's not a disruptive kind of class clown. That's just his personality. He doesn't mean harm by it. He just has to, he likes to see other people smile. He likes to make other people laugh. He's really good at making friends and not shy and anything like that. So when the drone hit me in the face, maybe my right side, hit me in the face, he immediately did not waste any time with a punchline. He says something to the effect of, he said, it's okay to cry. Everybody needs a good cry at one point in time. It's okay. If you need a shoulder, I got you. And I wasn't mad anyway. I was like, it took my mood down a little bit, but I wasn't mad. I immediately looked at him and just like, and everybody just started laughing. I was like, dude, if you don't stop and get back to programming your drone. I looked at him and was like, yeah, you would say that. But yeah, a lot of these kids have just the ability to light up a room with a joke or a comment or anything like that. So just, that's another thing that just allows me to just be in that learning environment that I love. Seeing them learn and seeing them come together and be one unit as a drone team. Next up, Young Authors Camp. Again, I have to reiterate for some people that I call it Young Authors Camp and not book writing camp, because you don't have to be an author to be a, let me put it this way, authors are not necessarily writers and writers aren't necessarily authors. You can be an author and not write a word. So what I do with my kids, and again why I call it Young Authors Camp, is because I cater it to some of the kids who aren't writers but they love to talk. So what I do with situations like that is I allow them to tell their story and then I transcribe it and then show them how to edit it or have another one of their classmates who is a strong writer to edit and proofread it. So this one kid doesn't feel like his options are limited because he doesn't have, sometimes doesn't have the skills to write. Of course, we want to boost their writing skills, so I will boost their writing skills accordingly, but I allow them to focus on their strengths. If your strength is talking, then we work with that. If your strength is writing, then we work with that. If your strength is drawing, then we work with that. And hey, you can illustrate something in the story. You can illustrate the front cover, however you want to do it. I don't like placing any restrictions on creativity, because I don't think creativity should be put in a cage. So I allow them to unleash their creativity with crayons and color pencils and what have you, and use their imagination to create an awesome, a phenomenal, what I'm hoping to be an awesome and a phenomenal book. But of course, when you're dealing with fourth and fifth graders, there is always a challenge. When you're dealing with people, it's always a challenge. So my challenge in this scenario, and this literally happened a couple days ago, I would have told you this, but again, I suck at creating content. So this story is still in my phone. Hopefully I will post it today or tomorrow or whatever, because I think it's valuable. I think it's valuable for anybody who wants to get into the youth development space, or anybody who wants to do a book writing camp. Like, here's what I've done. This is what has worked for me. This is what has not worked for me. So do you. But when you're dealing with kids, when you're dealing with people, I don't want to say kids, but when you're dealing with people, period, always you have to put morals and discipline before the actual task at hand. Because if you don't focus on the morals and the discipline to execute those morals and to lay the foundation for those morals, then whatever project that you're working on, whatever goal you're trying to reach, doesn't make a difference, because you don't have that foundation. Just like any house, no house can stand without a foundation. No kid, no person, no project can survive if it doesn't have that foundation. So practically, specifically in my situation, we had a snafu where kids would not stop talking, even with drilling into their head the concept of integrity, the concept of being trusted. They still had some challenges. So I chose to abandon ship from the day's project, or from the day's events, what I needed them to do, or the things I had scheduled for that day was to, I had three stories that were going to go in this book, and three teams. Of course, each team told their different story, and I was going to have two people from each group illustrate a scene. As my AC goes off, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but it's cool. So as I was going to have two people from each group illustrate a scene in the story, whatever they decided to draw. Maybe two more people. So I think it was about five or six in a group. It was five. Two more people proofread the transcript that I provided for them. So on the day before, they all told the story. And then I went to rev.com, and I paid them to transcribe it verbatim. So on this particular day, I was going to give two of my editors that transcript and have them proofread it to make sure that the story was going to be told grammatically, like it was grammatically correct and everything else. And it was easy to understand for the eye and not just for the ear. And then I was going to have maybe one person from each group help me out with the table of contents and get everybody's name and make them authors and or put them on the list of authors as I put each group with their respective story. Put each author with their respective story. And then document the appropriate kids as illustrators or document the appropriate kids as editors and really make this book as legit as possible. So that's what was planned. But that's actually not what ended up happening. What ended up happening is it started out so, so great. And I was so proud of these kids because when I went into the room, two girls came up to me and said, ooh, Mr. Barnes, we wrote our own story. Like, even outside of the story that they told me the week before, they wrote another story. And I was like, yo, all right, let's go. I like this. I like the initiative, which helps me. Like, look, I'm getting through to them. So they're like, I don't know when they did it at home or I don't know when they did it, but it was awesome. So again, I wanted to take it a step further. They wrote it. Now I wanted them to present it and show their public speaking skills and their presence on stage. And these particular girls had no problem. I said, should I read it or should you read it? They said, oh, we'll read it. Bet. So these girls are definitely not afraid of talking in front of an audience. So they read the story that they collectively wrote. And afterwards, they even fielded questions from the group. My questions from the other kids. And after that, it just kind of went down. Like I couldn't reel them back in from there. And the talking just got out of control. And I was like, you know what? We are not going to get anything done if we don't tackle this problem right now. And I mean, it was out of control. It was out of control. I don't know what they did before that or whatever, but it was out of control. And I won't say full disclosure, but honestly, I had trouble reeling them back in. But when the thing that I remember, and like, I don't normally handle fourth and fifth graders, so it's new to me, like different tactics and things like that to either get them to bring the noise level down or things like that. And they help. A lot of the kids will say, hey, if everybody's talking, just say 1, 2, 3, all eyes on me. Or, guys, I need you at a level 0. Level 0, of course, means no noise. I told them, I need you at a 0.1. I don't want anybody. Like, only thing you should be whispering is, hey, pass me the colored pencils. That's it. So, what I remember from my elementary school days is my teacher turning the lights off. It kind of calms the spirit, I guess. And so I did that. And right off the bat, bam, they knew what was up. Knew what was up. But still, talking kind of escalated. And I say, you know what, man? And that's another thing. I'm not sure what their carrot is. I'm not sure what their carrot is. And what I mean by what their carrot is anytime I'm managing a group,
I'd like to know what motivates them. Yeah, I'd like to know what motivates them. I'd like to know what keeps them going and what they don't want to go back to. So I know I got to know the ceiling and the floor, what they're shooting for and what they don't want to go, don't want to go back to. And I get the word carrot from the cartoon. I don't even know what cartoon it was, but I definitely remember, might have been a Hanna-Barbera or something like that, a Hanna-Barbera character. But a guy riding a horse, and he would keep the horse going by putting a carrot. The carrot was on a string attached to a stick. I'd throw in that carrot in front of the mule or the horse's mouth. So the mule the whole time ain't really looking for nothing in particular. He's just following that carrot. He's just following the food. So that's my analogy when I say follow the carrot. And anytime I teach my older teens how to manage people, I teach them how to identify somebody's carrot. What keeps them going? Some kids it may be money. Some kids it may be a job. Some kids it may be just the opportunity to be a part of the group. Just camaraderie. You have to know what motivates people. You have to know what their carrot is, because then you can lead them in the way they want to be led, and you can lead them in a way that is beneficial for the group too. So you have to know their carrot. These kids, I don't know their carrot. Don't know their carrot. Don't even really know if they want to be there. Which might be part of the issue. I don't know who, like, I don't really know the kids. So it's tough for me to work with them without knowing them. So that's that. But I really want to fast forward. Like, there was a lot that happened from turning off the lights and trying to reel them back in to, like, I want to fast forward to a really critical part. Really critical part. And honestly, it kind of, this part really made me cry. What made me cry was when I had to tell the story, well, when I had to talk about my family. So backing up a couple of steps, the coordinator, the program coordinator over the entire camp, ended up coming in the room and she asked the students to write an apology letter just for being disruptive, and that kind of thing. Well, one of the letters really hit me. Honestly, it kind of brought out two sides of me. It was, on the one hand, it was kind of, you know, I'll just be honest. It was disrespectful. It was disrespectful in the way I took it initially. But then that second half kind of took over, or maybe tried or did or whatever. But the second half of me took over and wanted to say, wait a minute, there's something deeper going on here. It wasn't just what he said. Like, don't just focus on what he said, focus on what made him say what he said. Like, the deeper meaning. Let's not look at the surface level. Let's not look at the tip of the iceberg. Let's look at everything below the surface. Look at everything else in the ocean. And don't take what's above the surface too personally, because there's a bigger issue here. And though, like, the two parts of me, the one that felt disrespected and the one that was empathetic or sympathetic, they were battling. So I asked the program coordinator, I said, you mind if I talk to him? So right off the top, I guess the part of me that wanted to see what was beneath the surface prevailed. And without getting too personal on his end about what he's going through, he told me, like, the reason he felt some kind of way, the reason he felt disrespected and unappreciated was because in the confines of the classroom, in that situation, he did not feel like he was at fault. Because all the kids who were disruptive had to write letters. Some of the kids who weren't disruptive, they didn't have to write letters. And I had them write their names down. And he felt like he should have been one of the ones to write his name down. But I explained to him, it's not just the fact that he was not talking, but he was maybe contributing and egging on the people who were being disruptive. You weren't talking, but you weren't being cooperative either. So he took exception to being part of the bad crowd, so to speak. And a lot of them really got in their feelings about being part of the bad crowd, not writing their names down. But this particular kid, what I found out was he was rejected, in a sense, by his younger sister. And she decided that because of whatever conversation that they were having earlier that morning, that she did not want to hear anything he had to say. Didn't want to talk to him, doesn't respect him. Anytime he talked to her or gave her instruction, she would put her hands over her ears like, I'm not trying to hear you. And he loves his sister, of course. And really, really wants to foster her growth. And when somebody that you're trying to teach, somebody that you're trying to lead and instruct, completely cuts you off, you right off the top feel rejected and offended. And when he was, I guess, not accepted in this classroom setting with me at the lead, that just kind of compounded the fact that his sister rejected him, and then found out that he does not have a good relationship, or that he's had some issues in the past. I won't disclose those, but he's had some issues in the past. So all of these things kind of were expressed in this letter that was seemingly disrespectful, but was like had an underlying meaning or an underlying issue that needed to be addressed. And I got with him in the fact that we both have younger sisters. Like, I haven't mentioned her on my podcast, but I love my sister to death. And I could really feel his love for his sister in the same way that I love my sister. So we kind of came together on that note. But what I had to tell him was that, look, your sister is human. When you try to lead her, when you try to instruct her, when you try to tell her what to do, it's not always do what I say do. To be a leader, you have to understand the mindset of your followers. You have to understand why you're leading those people, why they follow you. Because if you don't, again, that's the carrot that I mentioned earlier. You have to know their carrot. And of course, when she rejected him, that just kind of didn't sit well with him. But I think that kind of takes me to one point that I always want to make, that I always want to remind people is, look, and it happens to be my superpower, I guess, as not just as a youth mentor, but as a person. My superpower is listening. My superpower as a person, not just as a youth development coordinator, not as a program, but as a coach, anything, family, coworker, anything. My superpower is listening, because I believe in the power of listening as a means to heal. I believe listening is extremely therapeutic when you can be accepted by somebody. To pour your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions into somebody and have them accept you for who you are, your strong points and your weak points, everything that is you, it is amazing to have somebody accept you in that way. And just through the process of self-awareness and everything that I've been through, I have realized that that is my superpower. So anytime that a kid has something that they're going through, anytime they express a little bit of grief, I go into listening mode, because there's something there that we need to deal with. So I encourage everybody, whether you are a youth coordinator, whether you're in the youth development field, or whether you're just, man, just a person, just more and more, we have to find ourselves in a position, we have to encourage ourselves to be listeners and not always tell your story. Not always tell your story, but be in a position to listen. People say that's why you have two ears and one mouth, because you're supposed to listen more than you talk. Okay, Sean, fine. we'll take that. But definitely remember that listening is therapeutic, man. In my book, I talk about the power. Man, I forgot a quote in my own book. But I can't remember it right now. I can't quote it. But just listening. The power of listening, I believe, can stop a bullet. I truly believe that. I truly believe the power of a bullet, or the power of listening, can stop a bullet. It can stop somebody from harming themselves. It can harm somebody from harming somebody else, just by listening. So to all of you out there, if you work with youth, or if you're just people, you have coworkers, if you're around people, just listen. And I'll even take it a step further. If you're not around people, listen, one, to yourself, and listen to history. It's not history, or where that came from, but listen to nature. Listen to nature. I absolutely love what I do, no matter if I'm doing it inside the after school program that I typically have, or whether I go outside the doors of the building and minister and reach out and give some encouraging words to youth in the city. I love what I do, no matter where I do it. So if you are in a similar situation, I'm the team coordinator at a local YMCA. If you program events, if you are a coordinator, if you're a director, if you lead a group of young people and guide them through this world, whether it's speaking or whether it's activities, I would love to hear from you. Hit me on Instagram. I'm at Micah_DB, MICAH_DB. And I would like, yeah, go to the DM. I'd love to talk to you and just see what you do. It's really just a think tank. I take some of your ideas and you take some of mine. So hopefully that others in our similar situation can benefit. Plus, a comment from one class clown after another student flew her drone straight into my face. It did not help me out at all, but hey, here's something hopefully that can help you.